not always, but sometimes we can turn to the world and even the news for a little inspiration. If you do follow the news regularly, which I don't always, but I have friends who do and they keep me updated, but if you do follow it regularly, you've probably heard and even read a lot about Elon Musk. I think I pronounced his name right. But Elon Musk, he is a big figure right now, worth several billion dollars. He's the owner of PayPal and Tesla and SpaceX, most notably. I have a friend who is kind of obsessed with Elon Musk. He's always reading about him and telling me all of his new ideas and his successes. But the thing that is amazing about this man is his complete dedication to an idea, to his own goal. And that goal is to go to Mars and establish a human colony on Mars. Most people say that he's crazy and it can't be done, that he's putting all this money into this idea for no purpose. But he believes in it, and he believes that it's not only just an idea and something he wants to do, but it's actually part of his destiny and the destiny of the human race, that we are destined to go to another planet and to develop and spread throughout the universe. And he puts his money where his mouth is, too. He's put everything into this idea so that way he can achieve this destiny. But for those of us who have met Christ, getting to Mars, this grandiose plan, this is a trivial feat. Because we are made for greatness. We're made for a greatness which is beyond even this idea that Elon Musk has. As great as it seems, as impossible as it seems, we are made for more. Pope Benedict XVI has one of my favorite quotes, and he says, "You were not made for comfort. You were made for greatness." Isn't that the truth? We hear today in our first reading about Israel's vocation to be the light. Yes, that is their vocation. Sometimes we forget that when we read the Old Testament, that Israel was not just, the people of Israel were not just created and chosen in order to keep God's laws, but in keeping his laws, they were to be a light to the entire world. The source of a worldwide blessing that was given to Abraham originally, and then was passed on through Moses and through the prophets. But in Isaiah, we read how at the time of exile, after hundreds and hundreds of years, Israel had still failed to do this. And instead of actually being the light, they just turned and went into the darkness of the world and worshiped the false gods, throwing away the law of the Lord. That was their failure. They forgot what their mission was, that in living the law and in loving the Lord, they were to be the light. They were to be the salt of the earth. And so they were sent into exile. And so many years later, they came back disorganized, disunified. But God still had that plan that someone, a chosen people, a chosen one, would come and would bring the light into the world. And so God himself enters the story. He becomes a man in the person of Jesus Christ. He enters human history. And we read in the prologue of the Gospel of John, "In him was light, and the light was the life of men." Jesus is the light. He is the salt of the earth. We read in our Gospel about this, that those who believe and are baptized into him, those who believe and live the Beatitudes and who try to live this life, that they are to be the salt of the earth and the light of the world. Think about baptism. If you remember the last baptism that you were at, family member or your own family member, you know that one of the most beautiful parts of the rite of baptism is the handing on of the candle, the baptismal candle. And where is it lit from? It's lit from the Easter candle, which in the Easter vigil liturgy is lit and is a symbol of Christ himself, Christ the light of the world. God who passes through the Red Sea in the pillar of fire. And so from that Easter candle, the baptismal candle is lit, representing the soul of that individual, of that baby, of that adult who's being baptized, and now they bear Christ Himself in their life. We all, through baptism, have a new vocation and a new destiny to be salt in the, to be salt of the earth, to be the light in the world. Not our own light. It's not just about letting our talents shine before others. No. It's letting Christ shine through us, making Him present in our life, so that way He can be present in this world of darkness. When people really live this way, when they really are the light of the world and let Christ live in them, you notice it. I can think right now of a handful, a small handful of people in my own life, my own experience, who, when they walk into a room, you notice them. Even if they haven't said anything, there's something about them, a presence that they have, that you notice. And it's not just holiness. Sometimes we talk about holiness and we run the risk of conflating all of the elements that go into it. Holiness, a person who lives holiness, they express it through virtue. Virtues, and if we go back and think of our catechism definition, a virtue is a firm and habitual disposition to do the good. It's a good habit, something that we develop over time through our good acts. So we give to the poor, and we do that on a regular basis. We become generous then. We have a generous heart. We gain the virtue of generosity. So virtue is how holiness is lived, how it is expressed. There's one virtue, though, that stands out. And especially in our gospel today, to be the salt of the earth and the light of the world, this particular virtue comes to mind. And it is magnanimity. Magnanimity, one of my favorite words. And it's really two words in Latin. Magna anima, a great soul. Great soulness. That is magnanimity. St. Thomas Aquinas talks about the virtues in his Summa Theologiae, and he defines magnanimity and says that the person who is magnanimous deems himself worthy of great things. There's no room for mediocrity in a person who's magnanimous. But the person who's magnanimous dreams big. The word no doesn't really mean anything to them. They accomplish great feats because they know that they are worthy of great honors and that they have a great destiny. It's part of courage. The person who's magnanimous is, by definition, courageous. Because when difficulties arise, they persevere through them. They go all the way in order to achieve a noble and lofty goal. It's so necessary in our world to be magnanimous. I brought up Elon Musk at the beginning because I think, even though I'm pretty sure he's not religious, there's some sort of natural magnanimity there that we can see in people who strive to do great things, things that seem impossible to everyone else. But for the Christian, for you and me, for those of us who've been baptized into Christ, our magnanimity is so much greater. It is so much loftier. And it's not opposed to humility. A magnanimous person is also a humble person. A person who is magnanimous, remember, they know that they are worthy of great honors. And we only know that by knowing our dependence upon God the Father, knowing our identity as sons and daughters of the Father, and our identity in Christ. Once we know that, then our soul will be great. Think of the Blessed Mother. My soul proclaims the greatness of the Lord. That is magnanimity, if anything is. The person who is magnanimous makes a generous gift of self in imitation of Christ, who is the truly magnanimous man. Our world, brothers and sisters, our world is pusillanimous, though. Pusillanimous is the opposite of magnanimity. It is small-souledness, mediocre, filled with darkness. I was talking to a priest once, and he was saying that some people come up to him and say, oh, it must be so interesting to hear confessions. And he says, there's nothing interesting about it. that sin is boring. It's boring. Sin is boring because it's darkness. It's not, there's nothing exciting about it. So in our world, brothers and sisters, we need to be magnanimous followers of Christ. People who have big souls, who dream big, who aren't afraid to attempt the impossible, whatever that may be. Maybe for you, you're thinking about a lot of things right now. Maybe it's the conversion of your family. Maybe it's talking to someone about the faith that you've been scared to do for a long time, that you've been intimidated by. But these things, even these things, which seem so impossible, they're only the beginning. That God can do so much through us, just as He's done through all the saints throughout history. But it begins with prayer. It begins with the little things. The humility of recognizing that our identity precedes our mission. It comes first. Before we can be magnanimous, we have to know who we are. And that is sons and daughters of the Father who loves us. When we find ourselves basking in the love of God, then we can be magnanimous. We must also teach our children to dream big. It's easy to let them dream for a little while and then start to suppress that. And what's even more tempting is to impose our own dreams on them. We have our own idea about what it means to be successful, about what it means to be great. But maybe God has other plans. Maybe God has called them to a religious vocation. Maybe He's called them to the foreign missions. We have to be open to His will. Most of all, we need to open our eyes. I remember once I was in New York City for a few weeks, and I was on the subway, and I got off the subway, and there were hundreds of people everywhere. It's rush hour. And as I looked around, it was like a brick wall hit me. And all of a sudden, I had this thought. All of these people that I see right now, they're either going to go to heaven or hell. And yes, we believe in purgatory, but people who are in purgatory, we believe will be in heaven. So these people, every one of them has an eternal destiny. They're not just a random person that I see, but my life is connected to them because all of us were made for God and all of us have an eternal destiny. That moment changed the way that I look at a lot of things. And I wish I could say that it happens to me all the time, but it doesn't. It's easy to forget that. The magnanimous person tries to remember that at all times. That we, each one of us, has an eternal, immortal destiny. And that there is a world to win. There's a world to win out there. And God has given us the light. He's made us the salt of the earth in order to win it for Him. And this is so much better than going to Mars, isn't it? Going to Mars would be great, I admit. But what's better is that we all make it to heaven. And that we try everything in our power to do the impossible. Because nothing is impossible for God. I end with a quote from C.S. Lewis. A man who I believe was truly magnanimous. A man who really understood this virtue and who lived it in his own life. This is a quote from his essay, The Weight of Glory. Maybe many of you have read this before, but it bears being repeated because we need to remember who we are and what the task that is before us entails. C.S. Lewis. It is a serious thing to live in a society of possible gods and goddesses, to remember that the dullest and most uninteresting person you talk to may one day be a creature which, if you saw it now, you would be strongly tempted to worship, or else a horror and a corruption, so as you now meet, if at all, only in a nightmare. It is in the light of these overwhelming possibilities, it is with the awe and circumspection proper to them, that we should conduct all our dealings with one another, all our friendships, all loves, all play, all politics. There are no ordinary people. Next to the Blessed Sacrament itself, your neighbor is the holiest object presented to your senses. If he is your Christian neighbor, he is holy in almost the same way. Think about that. For in him also, Christ, verilatitat, the glorifier and the glorified, glory himself, is truly hidden. Lord, we ask you today, make us magnanimous, make us servants after the heart of your own Son, who is magnanimity itself.